Today, into the property matrix. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I've got his post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined again by Veronica Morgan. Hi there.
Hello, how are you?
Great, and thank you very much for spending some more time with us, because you made a comment to me on, in fact, a show that I recorded with you last week, which you'll put a link to, by the way, because that was quite an interesting chat, that this is probably as a complicated time in the property sector as you've ever seen.
Yes, it is. Nothing like a transitional market or conflicting information to, I guess, throw the cat amongst the pigeons, and buyers just really don't know what to do. They don't know what to make sense of, and they don't know what to believe.
No, and I saw one report over the weekend of one auction that was listed at just around a million, just under a million, and went to 1.8, which, you know, you think, what? How can that possibly be?
Well, auction is a really interesting thing. Now, I've literally written a book on auctions. Okay, so, and maybe if you're interested, I can offer a discount to the viewers. But I wasn't thinking about doing that. But
link below.
But I can. We'll talk about that later if you want. I've written a book on auctions because I find auctions very, very fascinating. It's all about human behaviour. Let's face it. But I'll give you an example as to some strange things that happen at the moment, and sellers, agents and buyers all play a part in this. And so the first auction I went to post-COVID restrictions, so that's the first time we're allowed to have a public, we'll go to a public auction again. This particular property, and he's in Sydney, it was being, originally the agent was pitching it to buyers and saying, I really think it's going to sit somewhere between 3.7 and 3.8. So it's expensive property, obviously. There's some, and buyers were like, nah, this is COVID, man. Market's falling off a cliff, COVID, nah, no way, not interested, nah, nah. So she's like thinking, well, no one's showing interest. This is not happening. And so she's gone back to her owner and said, look, it does really look like the market's really suffering. If you're committed and you really need to sell, you're going to have to drop your expectation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the vendor's expectation did drop to around 3.5. And the agent, because then the agent can adjust the agency agreement. And in every state, there's rules and laws around this. But so she's adjusted that, and there's a 10% range. So she's gone not even 10% under, and she's changed her quoting to 3.2 to 3.3. Gone back out to the market, got lots of interest. I go to the auction, and it was interesting because the reserve was around, I think, the 3.5 mark. We and three other buyers were prepared to bid over that reserve. We didn't buy it for our clients, but the ultimate price was 3.82. So ultimately it sold for what she'd sat down and worked out really where it should sit. She'd put that to the buyers. Buyers went, nah, I don't want a bar of that. Buyers then start saying to her, no, I won't compete at that level. I won't go to that level. So then she's forced to go and underquote it in order to get people to quote to the level that she'd said in the first place. So, I mean, it's only one example, but it's certainly an example of how an A-grade property in an A-grade location that attracts or appeals to a certain demographic of buyer. And it's not about the buyers having money. This is about family buyers predominantly. So it's a demographic of buyers that have the money, have the willingness to spend that money and see the value in those properties, and that ultimately got that outcome. So each buyer had argued with that agent throughout that process to say that no way on earth anyone's going to pay that money in this market. It took competition for them to get there. So you get that happening in this scenario where you've got headlines screaming, you know, 30% price falls, prepare yourself, you know, worst case scenarios from various economists. And so then you've got this a complete mismatch. You've got that happening. Oh, that's the evidence. Seven people registered. Yeah, four of them bid over the reserve, and it sold for what was originally expected. And that's one evidence, of course, one case. And then you've got headlines and mass thinking, which is not critical, and it hasn't actually got down to the nitty-gritty and said, well, really, what is going on?
Well, we've said a number of occasions, and we'll say it again, markets are multiple, right? Mm. There is not a property market. There are markets within markets within markets. And, you know, you have to get granular to really understand what's going on. So I'm going to give you an example. Over the last couple of days after the weekend, I had about half a dozen people, my followers, send me messages about what happened in the in their locales, right? Mm. And two basically were very bullish and said, well, I went to auctions, massive turnout, prices were over reserve and they sold, right? Mm. I had four saying nobody turned up. It was it was completely dead, right? Mm. Now, what was different about those particular properties was the markets they were in, right?
Yes.
So in fact, at the top end, as you say, for a very good property, you know, A+, there's always demand, right? But more broadly, perhaps down the market, units, you know, there's no interest at all. And that's what's confusing people at the moment, I think, that, you know, you can basically make whatever story you want to make at the property sector by picking a particular area, particularly a particular type of property, and, you know, trying to then come up and say, well, therefore, that shows me that the market is rising, falling, flat, whatever.
Exactly. And the thing is that I went to an auction, or actually went to two auctions, not the Saturday just gone, but the week before that. One of them, same sort of scenario, seven registered bidders. It was one of those properties, and we didn't buy that one either, I have to say. But I'd sat with the client. I'd said, look, if we were looking at a price recommendation, you know, that took into account all the negativity and confusion and lack of confidence, then, you know, it'd be A to B. But the thing is, this has got all those characteristics that other buyers will fight for. So in reality, I think you need to be thinking C. Now, C, it basically sold for $40,000 more than my C, right? So, and that's a classic example. The same day, I go and look at another really good suburb. So that house was in Balmain. I went to look at another auction in Randwick. And this is also a family home, but it didn't have all the A-grade characteristics. It was on a hill. You know, the way it had been renovated, the floor plan, it had some issues with it. So it was good butt. It was a real good butt house. So there were two registered bidders and they did not fight over it. It struggled and it sold for, you know, sort of crept into a reasonable price bracket. And so that's two very similar demographics, similar price brackets, in fact. Similar quality areas. So within those areas, it's not even just location. You know, those markets, the buyers will determine, I'm not going to compete for that, but I will compete for that. And what's really stark in a market where there's a uncertainty and lack of confidence, what's very stark and what I observe is that the A-grade properties will always get competition over them. In a hot market, when clearance rates are north of 70%, buyers will compete for anything. Because they've got FOMO and they're worried about missing out. They're not discerning. And this is the difference. This, for me in Sydney, obviously in the area that I'm talking about, that's a real differentiator. Buyers become discerning when things calm down a bit and they're not going to fight for that. But you're also talking about the unit market. Now, we've got, and I think this is something you said to me probably the first time we had a conversation, and it was something around the myth of oversupply or undersupply, I should say, the myth of undersupply. Mm. And I've been asking this question for a long time. How is it, say in Melbourne, for instance, how can you have a situation of oversupply coexisting with undersupply in a booming market, which is what was happening sort of in the 2013 to 17? How can that even happen? This oversupply thing or undersupply thing, it's just crap. And I actually like your explanation for it. It is crap. And I think this is where it's what that whole, you know, Warren Buffett thing, when the tide goes out, those you see who's been swimming with their pants down. There is so much stock out there that it's been built without an actual local buyer in mind. And without that local buyer in mind, and if you own that sort of property, then you are going to get stuck if you need to sell it. That's just a fact. And this is where those principles underlying property get ignored when there's a lot of money around. And now it's like, oh, is that what that means?
The rules have changed simply because, of course, supply demand has changed and availability of finance has changed and expectations of future property prices have changed. And, of course, the economic backcloth has changed. All of those things are in there, right? But one of the interesting questions is, with such diversity in outcomes, how do we make sense of any of the property indices that keep, you know, reporting what's going on?
Well, you can't, can you? Because, I mean, unless they are really at a local level, and even then you don't have enough data, you know, to make sense of that. I'm not sure if someone, do you know Kent Lardner? He's got suburb trends. And so, you know, I was talking to him about this, and he's using, I think it's SA3. You know, he said that, you know, suburb data is just too small. Yeah, you've got to go large. I think he uses SA3 to determine. So he's sort of working around that in terms of the actual, so you've got statistical significance and the actual numbers. But, you know, even within that, then you've got this sort of, you've got so many micro markets within the SA3. So it's a really difficult thing to make sense of. I honestly think that people have to divide themselves into, am I an owner-occupier or an investor, for starters, because the owner-occupier decision-making process is very, very different to the investor decision-making process. However, you sink that much money into any asset, you have to think like an investor. You have to be thinking, well, it's not good enough that I buy a home for my family to live in and I'm accepting that it might be worth the same in 5 years or 10 years. It's actually not good enough. Because I could do something. Oh, I could rent. Let's face it, vacancy rates are going up. You know, there are alternatives. And so it's being more critical about that. Instead of what a lot of owner-occupiers say, oh, it doesn't matter because I'm going to live in it for 20 years. I'm like, well, that it matters even more. The longer you hold it, the more it matters. So, you know, there's all of those issues. So, yes, you're right. How do you make sense of it? Well, you have to actually sort of divide yourself in those two camps. What am I first? Secondly, as an owner-occupier, you really do have to invest the time in research, and you have to accept that you can lose money in property. And once you accept that, you won't feel FOMO. You'll fear a different fear. You'll feel a different fear. You know, you'll be realistic. And so then you can actually be much more critical in the way you approach it. And I think CoreLogic, CoreLogic come out with a quarterly report called the Pain and Gain Report. It's a good reminder that you can lose money in property. And I think that is really step one, just and I guess all of your viewers cognizant of the fact that you can lose money in property, otherwise they wouldn't be listening to you. But this is what I think that people don't do enough of in this country. They don't think, oh, my God, this is a risk.
Yeah. And look, the fact is that any investment is always a risk, right? Whether it's a stock market, whether it's holding cash, whether it's holding property, there are always risks attached. And I always am astonished as my surveys, I still have lots of people who assume that property has no risk, right? It'll always go up. What world are they living in? They're not living in the real world, but perhaps they've swallowed the stories that a lot of the media are putting out there, that this is always a great time to buy whatever, right?
But it's weird though because the media puts out two different types of stories. It's like, yeah, there's polar opposites. It's like one end of the continuum or the other. There's nothing in the middle. There's no real pragmatic sort of information that comes by the media.
No, well, that's right. And one of the reasons why I'm here is to try and actually synthesize some of these different perspectives, because, you know, I know I'm portrayed as a property bear. I'm not really. I'm a realist. I really do believe that I'm actually trying to help people understand what's really going on and making better decisions as a result of it. And I think you and I probably share that common goal.
We do. In fact, we need to create a third category, you know, property realists. You know, we're not bears, we're not bulls. I've been accused of being a bull, which just cracks me up. And, you know, it's like, oh, no, I'm not. But, you know, and a lot of people think, oh, you're a buyer's agent. Of course you're going to tell people it's always a good time to buy and, it's, you know, you should buy. No, I'm not. And I'm an unusual real estate agent, let's face it. But the other thing that, you know, I think the first thing buyers need to, you know, respect is the risk. They need to respect that you can lose money. The second thing they need to understand is scarcity. And what does that mean? Because supply and demand is what fundamentally drives the property market. But often the demand comes from completely ridiculous beliefs. And so it's regardless of whether there's a hot market or a slow market, it's the scarce property, the one that always has a market, you know, the multifaceted buyer pools, all that sort of thing. The family buyer is a big one, but not in an area where you've got loads and loads of family houses, because then that's not scarce. You know, so it's always around that sort of being really critical about what is unique, what is unusual, what will be fought over when I go to sell it, because there's not a lot of them around. And honestly, I think those two things, risk, scarcity, if you just thought with that sort of lens, I think people will make a hell of a lot better decisions.
And I suggest that would then flag concerns about the multiple high-rise apartments, all the same. Mm. You know, another tower over there, very similar. Another one over there, very similar. There's no scarcity there, is there?
Zero. And, you know, I think too, a lot of those high-rise buildings have been built with a certain buyer in mind. And I've spoken to many developers who have, and I'm not going to propagate this myth that the Chinese buyer has been pushing up Australian property prices, because I don't believe that. I think it's a lazy argument. However, there are certain developments that have been built specifically with the Chinese buyer in mind and gone over there and pitched to Chinese buyers who, and I had a client who said that her family thinks she's a Chinese Australian. She said, look, my family think that you go in and buy an apartment just like you go in and buy a carton of milk. It's a commodity in China, you know, and that's sort of, you know, so anyone who's smart, who's got a lot of money and wants to build a big block of apartments to go and find a ready bunch of buyers that aren't that discriminatory in terms of the type of property they want, I'll have that one, thanks. You know, that's a buyer pool. The problem is any Australians got caught up in that, that didn't realise that they bought a product that's been developed for a different market, not for our local market, and then that single source of market dries up. That's when they really get stuck. So it's buying with blinkers on, not really realising exactly what it is they're buying into.
Mm. And, you know, we sometimes say a lemon is a lemon or a dog is a dog, right?
Yeah, there's lots of dogs out there. I think there's more lemons than there are good properties, to be honest.
Right. And the difficulty is that it's very difficult to convert a lemon into something that isn't a lemon.
Mm. Mm. Do you know, potentially, you know, this is not advice, but potentially, depending on how well some of these buildings may have been built, there could be an opportunity to get in there and actually start amalgamating a lot of these apartments and making bigger apartments. Mm. Because really that's the opportunity, I think, that's been missed by a lot of developers who've been after more of a quick buck and an easy buck. But there is a demand. There's a demand for larger apartments. Downsizers want bigger apartments. Families are starting to live in apartments. You know, and so, you know, there may be an opportunity there.
That sounds like the opportunity for a new show, you know. Well, knock through.
Knock them together.
Now, one of the things I wanted to touch on before we finish is, you know, and I'm thinking of, you know, location and those sorts of conversations, because one of the observations I have is that buyers always have to make some compromises somewhere, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, and funny, I mean, I get people, clients in my business, and they might have a budget of, you know, if they've got a million or two or three, it doesn't matter how much money they've got. They will say, if only I had another X. And it's like, if you had another X, your expectations will go up in accordance and you'd still be missing out on stuff that you really want. The important thing is that people have to understand what to compromise on. And what I find quite often, particularly with couples, they'll actually sort of agree on what to compromise on before they go out looking at property. And then they have these sort of fights going, well, I agreed to compromise on five things and you're only compromising on two. You know, there's this sort of debates that go on. The reality is that you got to get out there looking at property to understand, and there's compromises you're making without even realising you're compromising. And I think that's really the long-term nature of property, that people are so focused on the here and the now, and that if they forget that. So, yes, nothing's perfect, you know, but there's a lemon, you know, just because a really good, even A-grade property, there's always something that's not exactly perfect, right? But it's just that they're small in comparison with everything else. Those imperfections don't dominate the property.
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, trading off, making some compromises is probably a critical part of it. Now, one other question I wanted to touch on was auction clearance rates, because I think people, again, are being very much misled potentially by the current numbers.
Well, I actually saw a news article, I think it was on Nine News, saying that, you know, properties going to auction are selling for 9% more than properties that take an offer, or the owners that take an offer. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting, isn't it? Because there's no parallel universe for auction clearance rates. And you could say that, okay, an A-grade property will get lots of offers prior quite often, and so therefore it'd be good advice for the agent to say to the owner, you should go to auction because it's highly likely those people will compete and even pay more. However, a B or C-grade property, the agent's going to try and get an offer for that property because there might only be one buyer and it's not going to ever get to auction. And so that gets included in the clearance rates though. So, you know, people got to understand what data is included in those rates. So there's an element of manipulation in that. And, you know, I like to look at how many sold prior because that, to me, actually says more about the mind or the confidence in the market because that's basically saying agents don't have confidence in the market. You know, so looking beneath the clearance rate is really important. But different cities have different acceptable rates. Like you look at the rate in Brisbane, for instance, you know, I think it was 38% last weekend. You know, that's not too bad for Brisbane. But in Sydney, that means, you know, the market's falling off a cliff. We only saw those levels of clearance rates during COVID lockdown when basically properties were being withdrawn because of the change. You know, and you can't rely on that either. That's completely... you know, irrelevant really. Clearance rates for me are important because you say, okay, what they're doing, they're just reflecting what the confidence gesture is. It's a marker and you got to look at the exact the same source of clearance rates every single week. You can't go mixing and matching because they have different methodologies. But also it's like to rely on clearance rates without actually diving in and looking at regions within the city, you know, like, the different, there's what, 8 different regions or something in Sydney, they will vary markedly. And then you've got to look at the quantity of properties that have been auctioned. And if it's sort of less than 100, it's in each area, it's a bit spurious as to what's going on. So, yes, long diatribe there about auction clearance rates, but I like them in the sense that, you know, they give some level of consistent reporting, but I don't like them when they're relied upon.
Mm. Right. So, you know, we just reflect on our conversation. Got to be careful about auction clearance rates. Mm. You've got to be careful about price information, right? You've got to be careful about the auction versus not the auction. You've got to be careful about what you buy and where you buy. Mm. This is not a simple process, is it?
No, it's not a simple process. And this is the thing too, is that Australians think we should be able to do it ourselves. You know, it's one of an issue, obviously, and, you know, I'm a buyer's agent. I help the very small percentage of clients that say, this is risky. This is challenging. I don't want to do it without expert guidance. But that's a very small percentage of Australians. Most Australians have this sort of sense that I should be able to do this. And if you can't, it actually doesn't mean that you are a failure. It means that you are succumbing to a really, really, really complex process.
Well, I'm amazed that quite often people spend more time doing an internet search when they buy a new pair of socks than they do when they buy a new property. I mean, the amount of time and effort is, you know, if you think about the investment that you're making, you know, well, if I get a pair of socks that doesn't fit, that's not an issue. If I get a property that doesn't fit, I'm living with that decision for a long, long time. It's going to impact me financially into the future. So I'm always very, you know, concerned that people don't do the work, they don't go far enough into really understand what's going on. And so, you know, to me, I always come back to do more work, do more work, do more work. You can never do enough work.
Well, I've got this sort of analogy. It's like, you know, you're walking through a turnstile. You know, you click through the turnstile, you're on the other side of the turnstile, you can see where you came from, but you can't go back there. And everyone seems to be in this great big hurry to get through the turnstile. Then they stop. Then they take a moment, take stock. It's like, that's not the time to do it. You know, that you've got to, because what you're saying is that the costs of getting into the wrong property are massive. And not only that, but there's relationship costs, there's just psychological costs, there's just general, you know, disappointment in life costs. There's all that stuff that goes on. But there's this rush to buy because other people have done it. And there's this sense of, you know, achievement in Australia. And you know, I think I mentioned the last time I was on a video with you about, you know, we're helping first home buyers because, oh, my God, I just want to make sure that the first rung is solid because it's so this rush and this sense of achievement when you get there, it wanes so quickly if you did buy the wrong property. And it's only afterwards that you even go, oh, there were alternatives. I could have approached this differently. You know, it's highly alarming.
Yeah, well, of course, we don't buy property enough. Most people don't buy property enough through their life to really learn all the ropes, right? And they're doing it in probably in a different context because of financially where they are and what the market is doing, what the economy is doing. So there are so many variables. So I always say be cautious. The other thing I always say is, and make sure you do your numbers, because that's the other thing that I'm surprised about is how little people do in terms of thinking about their cash flows and about the other costs. Because when you buy, there are lots of other ancillary costs. When you own a property, there are lots of other costs that are involved in actually maintaining the property and the rates and all those sorts of things. And very few people actually, you know, put that into their thinking as well. So there are just so many traps for the unwary.
Well, on that, it's interesting. You get a lot of people, particularly not just first home buyers, a lot of people say, oh, I don't want to buy strata because of the levies. And I'm like, okay, let's just pull this apart a little bit, because what are those levies for? What are you doing? What are you paying for? And granted, some buildings have silly levies because of the sins of previous owners haven't been putting money aside. But the reality is it's a way of budgeting to insure, to maintain, just short-term maintenance and also long-term sort of upgrades and maintenance on properties. It's a way of budgeting for that. Now, if you own a house, you still have to pay for that stuff. If the roof starts leaking, it's you 100% that has to deal with that. You know, it needs a paint, you've got to deal with that. You've got to keep those windows painted so that they don't get wood rot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of maintenance involved, and you're absolutely right. And a lot of people think when they're buying a house, it's cheaper to own a house than it is an apartment. It's like, oh, no, not necessarily. So, yeah, it's that whole cost of ownership that people do need to be aware of. Renting is lovely. You know, you can move in, you can whinge about your landlord, you can move out when you want to if you don't like it. And that flexibility is something that's underrated, I think.
Well, I certainly agree. And particularly now where rentals are actually becoming a little cheaper and there's more supply, lots of supply, you know, the chances are that property prices, I don't know what you think, but my view is that it's unlikely that overall prices will, you know, accelerate away from where we are. They might muddle along, they might go down a bit, some might drop dramatically. But I think that the key message has to be cautious, be careful. You don't have to rush, right?
No.
Do the work, make sure that you've actually got all your ducks in a row, and make sure that you've actually made your decision on a rational, logical basis, not just on, you know, intuition or because somebody there is bidding higher than you.
Well, yeah, and you've got to look around. And I think this is something that a lot of buyers don't do. They don't sort of pop their head out of the little rabbit hole and look around and think, well, what are the other alternatives, you know, that might actually make more sense for me or might actually give me more value? And I'll give you an example. It's you know, a lot of first home buyers in particular, not only first home buyers, they're looking at house and land packages, and they go out far extremities of our cities, and our regional towns have got these house and land packages. And you go out there and God, I was looking at some in the outside of Sydney recently, and they're like 250 square meters, these blocks of land. They're tiny, tiny. You go a couple of suburbs in that might be 10 years old, you know, the house is a bit dated and a little bit tired and whatever, but they're on bigger blocks of land, much bigger blocks of land. Any loss that you're going to get from buying brand new has been factored into the price. So there's actually some better value to be had from buying existing property, and actually more, you know, closer into the CBD too. I mean, there's a, you know, maybe a 5-minute commute, but I mean, at the end of the day, more established areas, more owner occupiers, you know, they've got more amenity quite often. But it's this sort of, it's silo thinking, you know, because we're all guilty of it, and we go and look where we want to look, and we don't actually go, hang on a minute, are there alternatives? And it's just really important. And I think that's an opportunity that something like a COVID slowdown can give buyers to go, well, take that. You don't have FOMO. It doesn't mean don't do anything. It means use this time to actually prepare yourself, educate yourself, and have the benefit of not being under pressure to act.
Absolutely. You know? Great advice, I think, Veronica. Thank you very much for that. Now, where can people find out more about you?
Well, I'll look at my board here. Do you like my board? So, if they're a first home buyer, I would really encourage go to homebuyeracademy.com.au, and there's a free course there to help you learn how to price property. So it's /free course. And look, I'll just give you two things. How about that book? I'll give a discount to listeners. So I'll give listeners auction ready. It's getauctionready.com.au. I'll give you 30% off, plus I'll pay your postage. How's that? That's a bargain.
Hey.
You don't have to shop around for that one. And but the code is DFA. So you have to put the code in, DFA, 30% off. And anyway, this has got access to the podcast, has got access to various other resources as well. So I encourage you to do that.
Well, terrific, Veronica. And we should also say that you've kindly agreed to come on to one of my live shows in a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Exposed to the full blast of DFA viewers. So that'll be really exciting.
I'm looking forward to it and I'm worried at the same time.
No, don't be worried. They're very kind generally. Just don't mention China.
Won't mention the war.
I appreciate your time today. That's been terrific. Thank you very much. Talk again
soon.
Thanks,
Martin. See you. Bye.
Bye.